Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And here we are, Friday morning, and I'm looking out, and the mists off the ocean are coming through the trees. Not too thick. It's just sort of appealing.
And here in the original capital of British Columbia, the fog is just lifting off the Fraser River.
Right.
So, a misty, foggy day.
Yeah.
But it's not cold under Canadian standards.
Or by even Vancouver standards. So.
Yeah, very pleasant.
Yeah.
Well, we only get a white Christmas every 1 in 11 years.
My God, you're incredible with numbers, Jim.
Well, yeah, you work in the news business your entire life. You remember a fact or two. Bob, you were saying just before we started that opportunities are starting to build in the gold sector. What's the story there?
Well, it's looking really good. Well, you know, most of the street goes on about dollar down, gold stocks up. And that's the mantra that's been in the market since the 1960s. But there is a more thorough way of looking at gold, and it's what I did ages ago, was just take the price of gold and deflate it by the CPI, so you end up, or the rate of inflation, so you end up with the real price of gold. Because in senior currency terms in England, hell, it was fixed price for about over 100 years. But within that, if you deflate the price of gold, it goes up and down. And not only that, it goes up and down with what's happening in the financial markets. So here's the gist of it, is you have, historically, you get a great global commodity boom. In 1920 was very important, and then it crashes. Then that sets up a decade of speculation and financial assets to September 1929. And then you get the post-bubble contraction when most asset prices go down. Now, there was one previous to that when, with the Civil War in 1863 or whatever it was, commodity prices got exceptionally high, crashed, and then you went into, the wonders of stocks and bonds, and such that you had a great bubble complete in 1873. So, and then followed by a great depression until 1895. So this is where we are now, as there was kind of a double on the great commodity boom, 2008, and then 2011, and then a decade later, you'd expect a great bubble to complete, and that was in January 2022, you know, a year ago. So there's also something else going on in the market, Jim, and I've just done a study on it, and that is that really outstanding market phenomenon can have a peak in January. And an outstanding one was the Nikkei, the Japanese market, and it traded up to the last trading day in 1989, but that one was all on its own, And the money being made in Japan was so huge that the Japanese speculators were playing all around the world, and some guy bought Pebble Beach Golf Course, and then 6 months later he was forced out on a margin call. I think he lost $300 million on that deal. And then, you know, straight up, and it was, I know what the number was, that the calculation of the real estate value of Tokyo was greater than the calculation of real estate for all of the United States. So, I mean, it was a crazy bubble. So anyways, it crashed and crashed for a long time. You had gold and silver with their crazy mania. I think it was January 21st, 1980, when the best was in for that one. And then even one just straight in the stock market with the New York Stock Exchange peaked, I think, January 10th, 1973, and was followed by the worst bear market since the 1930s. So here we are. If you've got something strong going on into January, chances are you'll have an important peak with it. And, of course, what do we got? Hot uraniums and the Bitcoin thing. Who knows? If you look around, there may be some others. But you do have hot sectors going into January, reaching technical excesses. So I think we're going to get a speculative peak in here from which we'll get a correction. Now, I know we were talking earlier about the NASDAQ index setting new highs.
Yes, the NASDAQ 100 could hit a new high today.
Yeah, well, they kind of like got some of those high-tech stocks that they like and are bidding up. So, there's still problems in the stock markets. You had the one that we go on about all the time, is that in March, the yield curve inverted. Now, the yield curve is the difference between long rates and short rates, and most of the time, short rates are lower than long rates. But when you get into a certain kind of speculative stock and credit market, short rates will get higher than longs, and that's called inversion. And every inversion has been followed by a recession. So I think the buoyancy in the U.S. economy, and not in Canada, and good employment numbers are due to people getting back to normal from the horrendous intrusion of the COVID lockdown. But somewhere that will have, people have gotten back to about as normal as they can get. And then on top of that, you've got the yield curve. And then, like China already is in a recession. And I think it looks like we're going to go into a recession, in which case these elevated stock prices, like the NASDAQ, with their hotshot stocks, ain't just going to make it. But what we look at here, Jim, is that with these rising sectors, now not everybody is in the uraniums or Bitcoin, but where there is buoyancy, one could take some money off the table and build some liquidity, because in a post-bubble contraction, times get very hard, and whatever cash you got is very valuable. And also whatever loans you have to service, it becomes very difficult. So it's time for prudence to reign, Jim. Yeah.
Yes. Now, I'm wondering about China's recession. Of course, the Chinese government would never admit it.
Yeah.
But they were overly reliant on real estate to keep everything afloat. Canada, the same thing, overly reliant on real estate.
Yeah. Well, I think the real estate bubble definitely in China is over. Now, this is important, I think, for North America, because let me recall. Now, residential property values in Vancouver, which is one of the hot markets in North America, if not the world. So it soared up with crude oil and other things to 1980. And I remember at the time, and then I remember looking into the numbers afterwards. And then the hit to the housing market was astounding, because like up in British properties, you know, which is expense account living and sort of high end, the prices for houses fell to one third. Then also at the time in Toronto, there was this, in the Financial Post, I guess it was, a long going story about some speculator, malfeasor guy, had a grand house in a nice area in Toronto, and the trust company seized it, and by the time they got rid of it, you know, 3 or 4 years later, it was at one third of the high placed on the books. And then I checked around here. This is, again, after the big commodity boom and speculative surge and inflation and everything to 1980. And properties in a nice area in Vancouver, but not high-end, they fell in half. So this is what could be ahead, that and it's been a very intense bubble. Too many governments have been constraining the expansion of the of building houses, and I think that'll change. So we live in interesting times. So again, we come back to, in a post-bubble contraction, debt will be very difficult to service, and having some liquid assets and some income from investments is going to be very nice.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. One of the headlines that caught your eye: summer of central bank buying gold extends into the fall.
Yeah. You know, Jim, the reports are coming out, and they have to be honest. And there are central banks that are buying gold. I can't recall which ones, but there are buying gold. Now, it gets interesting as to whether they're buying gold because they're afraid of their own inflation, or if they're figuring out that gold really is the only reserve to have in banking. So it'll be interesting to see how this progresses. But on central banks, they have been unbelievably reckless, just pouring money into the system in the COVID contraction, and then boom. That when the boom returns, that you get with severe price inflation and stuff like that. So, but I think that on the next contraction, many folks are going to look at the central bank and say, hey, you spent trillions of our tax dollars promising that nothing could go wrong. And here we are in very hard times, and your theories don't work. So, and especially when they get reckless with those theories. So my guess is that the between practical economists and the practical public, the U.S. Fed will be put back on a gold standard. That'll limit their ability to be reckless in the credit markets. And but it's also fascinating because interventionist economists claim that with a gold standard, they can't ease credit at a time when credit should be eased. But hey, the markets know what to do in a credit contraction. And that what this has done is that you've had more than 100 years of economists not quite knowing what's going on in the market and thinking every contraction is going to be a disaster and easing. So this is where the U.S. dollar has lost, you know, 97% of its purchasing power since 1914 when the Fed opened its doors for business. So the problem is a central bank not on a gold standard and being run by guys who do not understand markets. I mean, the last time you had a century of inflation like this was in the crazy 1500s. And then in the early 1600s, people woke up and realized various reforms need to be done. So on one side, you can be distressed about how crazy it is now. But on the other side, Jim, you can look and say, hey, this could be ending action, and we can get a political reform, which would then bring in central bank reform. Hey, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, central banks, as you said, now buying gold. China's been buying gold and Russia as well for the last 11 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they're doing now. As I said, they're doing the right thing, but I don't know if they understand they're doing the right thing.
Meanwhile, Canada and the UK sold off all their gold, and we don't know if there's any gold in Fort Knox.
Well, listen, we'll just keep this between you and I and our listeners, but you know that dreadful stuff called radon gas?
Yeah.
It's in basements? Right. The radon gas in the basement of Fort Knox has turned all the gold to lead. I have that on good authority.
Well, didn't the U.S., when Germany asked for their gold back, send them gold-plated tungsten?
I don't know about that,
yeah.
But I do know from a source, a very good source, many decades ago, that either Dresdner Bank or one of the other big ones, at 1938, realizing war was inevitable, they took a huge gold part of their gold reserve, and guess where they put it? With the Bank of England. So they knew that whenever, whatever happened with the war and whatever happened, they'd be able to get their gold back. That's a true story. So, oh, they probably would have had gold in Swiss banks as well, but you have to diversify a little, and yep. So German commercial banks did put their gold reserves in the enemy in England.
Headline, China's consumer prices fall fastest in 3 years. Factory gate deflation deepens.
Yeah, that means price coming out of the factory. And that's, you know, you go from commodity prices to the producer price index, or they used to call it the wholesale price index. And now there they are. They're having to drop their prices, and then that eventually gets into the whole system, such that consumer price inflation, which I think got up to 7%, and maybe it's about 3%, it can get back down to more towards zero, you know, in the next few years. So it's not that prices are going to go down. Is they stop going up.
Well, the Chinese government had hoped to turn their economy into one like the U.S., where it's driven by consumers. But their consumers have lost all this money in investing into those empty cities.
You're right.
Yeah, so hard to be a good consumer when you have to pay mortgage money on something that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that overbuilding in China is going to be fascinating to watch over the next 10 years or so. It's just incredible. Well, it was like going into the 1873 bubble, the mania was in railroads. And in the eastern states, they were building railroads all over the place. And then that's when, I guess it was Vanderbilt or something like that, said that there was no business in building railroads from nowhere to nowhere. So then what you have here in China is they're building roads and railroads from nowhere to nowhere, and the nowhere is a bunch of empty, stacked-up apartments.
Yes, a friend of mine in Hong Kong has sent me videos of those empty apartment blocks now being imploded because they were never finished. They didn't have windows and stuff, so the weather got inside and wrecked them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I can. Yeah, I can see that. So.
And also, when you don't have people in a building, no one's looking after it.
Oh right.
Yeah.
No.
So one little leak will turn into a torrent eventually.
Yeah. No maintenance, and it just deteriorates. So.
From the Wall Street Journal, adrenaline-fueled trades sweeping the market. We just talked about that, uranium and Bitcoin.
Yeah. Oh, I love the term, adrenaline-fueled.
Yeah.
And also, Jim, as we started off with, if you have a hot market going into December, January, it will likely set an important high. And I think that's what we're getting. Don't ask me why it works, but when you sit down and I listed out all of these speculative peaks occurring in December or January, it's just the way it works. And actually, I found one when reading a book about Thomas Gresham, who in the 1500s was one of the great traders in history, and also he represented the British Crown in the money market in Antwerp. And in 1554, end of January, in a letter he wrote, he said, the stock market has had a crash and it is a disaster. But there was no way whether I could find out whether it had a December high. But it certainly had a January hit. So, yeah.
Headline from the Wall Street Journal, renters are starting to get concessions from landlords again, maybe in the U.S., certainly not in Vancouver.
No, not here, but yeah, but that's a telltale sign where the product is too high and there's more of the product coming on stream. And renters have been, less eager to commit. So, yeah, it looks like it could be changing.
Headline, oil extends longest decline in 5 years on oversupply fears. I thought OPEC was trying to cut back.
Oh, yeah. They at times they turn the taps off. But you remember, Jim, in August, there were touts all over the place that crude was going to go to $150. And that was due to looking at Middle East problems. And the high, 2008, was 147. I remember that. We had upside exhaustions on the daily, the weekly, and in writing about it, noted and said that just with these two readings, we can get a cyclical correction in gold. And if the monthly reading comes in, we can get a secular decline. Sorry, not gold, but crude oil. We can get a secular decline in crude oil. Yeah. Which happened. So, but at the moment, well, as you remember, in August we were talking about a potential high for crude in late September based on seasonal patterns, and it could go down to a dismal low maybe in January. Maybe the dismal low has been hit already. I mean, it sure got whacked. And that's also a good thing for ordinary folk, you know. I mean, eventually the cost of heating fuels and gasoline and stuff like that will kind of all gradually cool out. So,
of course, we don't really see that much of a decline in gasoline prices in Vancouver because we pay the highest prices in North America.
Oh, that's right, because the constraints on refinery and having to bring in a fair amount of gasoline from the States. So,
yeah.
Plus, is they keep adding layers of taxation to the pump price.
Yeah, we have to pay, I think, over 18 cents a liter for transit.
Well, originally, taxes on gasoline were set so that they could continue to build new highways, maintain old ones, and build bridges. And then they put tax revenues from gasoline into general revenues, in which case it doesn't get spent on the original promise to maintain roads, for example.
And all these people with electric cars. Vancouver's the Tesla capital of North America, too.
I guess so.
Yeah, is that at some point they're going to start taxing how far you drive because you don't pay road taxes on your hydro bill.
Yeah, that's true. Also, as you know, as we've been talking, Jim, I think the electric vehicle craze has run its course, and people are finding them actually very expensive to run, very expensive to build, and in some case, you're going to get a 20 grand hit in putting in a new battery. And then in another case is that damn things will blow up all on their own, and insurance companies are beginning to realize that. So somewhere, realistic pricing and judgment on electric vehicles will come in, and I think the fad's over.
Bob, all the best of the season.
Righto, Jim, and you too, and we could do a little hum a little jingle bells or something like that, but I can't sing.
No.
But I'm going to recommend people go into Music Choice and find a Glenn Miller, the old swing band version of Jingle Bells. It's really lively and fun, an extended version. And so if you want to have a kind of a fun Christmas song, there you are.
Bob, thank you so much again.
Good to be with you, Jim, and look forward to whenever we do the next one.
Next week.
Very good. I'm with you.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.